Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
Welcome to science class, everybody. I'm Greg Meyer, and it's good to be with you. You know, it's always nice to get the people who don't have cabins together for a weekend. Before we dive into science class, though, just one other thing. You all have heard the news about Flannery Castile's death and Geronimo Yanez's acquittal now, or, you know, being found non-guilty on all the charges. It's, you know, I have my opinions on these things. I'm sure all of you do as well. For me as a pastor and for us as a community, it isn't our job to be the judge and jury about the judge and jury. I think it's our job to be the agents of change of the things that we think we need to change and to be that way. And, you know, so I'm not going to pontificate over maybe what should happen or why it was the right decision or something like that. I just think it's important for us to realize right now that this is, you know, blind justice is blind to some things it shouldn't be, and it isn't blind to some things that it should be. That's sort of what we're learning, I think, right now. And one of the things that we can do individually and corporately in this larger society is start building those circles of trust, start weaving those ropes with people so that we can have the kind of society where people feel secure enough, they feel safe enough, that we can start making some of the changes without being threatened. We can change a lot of things from the outside. The government can pass laws and legislation and all sorts of things to try to mandate us to do right things, but really it's going to happen when people feel it in themselves and we begin to express a different kind of world, a different kind of society among each other. And that's going to happen when each of us starts living that out in people's lives. So let's be those kind of people. This is a tough time for us, and particularly for us as a city, just because it all happened right here. So be a part of that. Anyway, maybe a little bit of what we're talking about in science class today fits in with that. So yeah, we do silly things like science class once in a while because I think we have a lot to learn from that. A couple weeks ago when we were gathered, last week we were at the falls, but we weren't because that huge storm came through and kind of would have blown us all into the creek, so we decided that wasn't such a good idea. But here we are. And one of the things we talked about when we gathered last time was that there is no conflict between God and science. There's just no conflict there, even though religion often seems to think there is, you know, but there really isn't. I mean, God is not threatened by scientific discovery. In fact, God celebrates scientific discovery because when we start understanding this world better, we start understanding how God works in the world a little bit better, and that's good news. That means we can partner. We can work alongside God more, and that's, you know, what it's all about. And when I say God that way, obviously, I'm using that three-letter word to signify something that's much, much bigger than any of our conceptions that we might have in our head about what God is. Another issue that some people think math and scientific inquiry mess up is the whole, you know, the wonder and the beauty of the world. Like, you know, science wants to turn a sunset into numbers and algorithms, you know, and take all the fun out of it. And I don't think that's right either. I mean, I don't see that as the experience, you know, that I have. I remember my organic chemistry class. I was a senior in high school and took organic chemistry, and our first real project with organic molecules was synthesizing isoamyl acetate. That's it right there. And I remember isoamyl acetate because it is a molecule that is responsible for the aroma of a banana. You know what? High school kid wouldn't think that was a lot of fun. I mean, it was amazing to start with some fairly ordinary chemicals and distill them, and all of a sudden realize that you could turn the entire lab into, it smelled like a banana factory. And yes, I am aware that bananas don't come from factories, okay? My initial reaction was, this is really cool, like, we just made bananas. And then my next reaction was, wow, I mean, that's kind of disappointing that here in this lab with, you know, beakers and test tubes and Bunsen burners, I could create the isoamyl acetate that makes a banana smell like a banana. I mean, but then what happened is the next time I ate a banana and I peeled it open and I got a whiff of that isoamyl acetate, all of a sudden I realized I hadn't taken the wonder out of anything. I hadn't taken anything amazing and made it ordinary at all. In fact, I was being pulled out of the ordinary into a deeper level of amazing. Because, I mean, think about it. I needed this classroom, this whole lab with all of this apparatus in very carefully controlled circumstances to do something that this banana could do inside its peelings. I said, wow, how did an ordinary banana do all that? I mean, this was really hard work for me and all these people, and it's doing it in there. And then, I was like just transfixed, just like staring at this banana wondering what else is going on underneath that skin. I mean, it's doing more than just making isoamyl acetate, right? You know, so kind of the conclusion from that, this kind of general science idea, is that science does not take the wonder or the beauty out of nature. Instead, it draws us deeper into it. And that's why we try, that's why we do this, that's why we're looking at it. And that's what kind of this whole premise about this whole series and certainly what we want to do today is. And, you know, it doesn't explain away God, which is what some religionists are afraid science is going to do. Instead, it gives us a peek into the mind of God. And what we discover when we go there through science isn't that God is, you know, the God of magic and impossibility and laws of physics-defying tricks and stuff like that. What we find is that it works. God works. I mean, God actually makes sense. The beauty of the world that God works in and through is amazing, and it is greater than anything we will ever really grasp and totally understand, because we just don't have the potential to do that. But at the same time, we can participate in it. And that means that we can be partners with. We can partner with God. We can be what we've been talking about, co-creators with God, which is, I think, what God is really looking for us to be. So I think it's about time for us to kind of get the relationship between God and science straight. I think it's misunderstood by far too many people on both sides of the argument, and to realize that, these work together. They're good partners. But I want to do something more specific about science today other than, you know, just kind of talk about it in general. I want to talk about the big side of science. I want to talk about the really big stuff. In fact, I want to talk about the universe, all right? So we're going to dive into this a little bit. So Minneapolis is a big place, right? We all know that. But Minnesota is a bigger place. And the United States is bigger still. And North America is bigger than that. And then you got the world, which is a lot bigger than any of those. But really, none of those are big at all. In fact, they're not even noticeable when we start talking about the universe. You know that typical picture that you all had in your science textbook of the solar system? You know, and it lets you know that it's not to scale, but, I mean, it's ridiculously not to scale. First of all, the size, and everything is all completely wrong in there. I got a few props here for you. If this is the sun, okay, this is a number 4 soccer ball, 8 inches in diameter. If this is the sun, the Earth is this. This bead on the end of this string. Can you all see it? You can. The light's shining on it. Okay, you can see a little bead down there. So if this is an 8-inch soccer ball is the sun, this bead, which is about 1/12 of an inch in diameter, would be the Earth. So, you know, a little different maybe than what you often see. So if this is the Earth, can you guys, if you look real carefully, can you see where Field School is? Yeah, you can. If you look through the window, you can see. I mean, now you can't even find North America. I mean, it's ridiculous to even try to, like, find continents on there. You know, I won't go on and on about that. But that's kind of the size of things to kind of start wrapping your head around. But let's look at distance, because I think that's what's really more important. This is a NASA diagram. That's actually, in terms of size, those are proportionate. You can kind of see the third rock from the sun is the Earth. If you could see all of the sun, you would realize that, yeah, it's about like that, okay? But that size, distance is really important. So Andrew over there is by that man here. Take that. Okay, so if he's standing right there and he's holding the sun, can you see Ellery back there? She's in the dark in the corner way by those chairs. Can you all see the bead? She's holding one just like this. Can you all see it? Yeah, right. Well, she actually is. So that is in distance. That is what we're talking about. That's the sun. That's what the Earth would be like, both in distance and in size proportion. Okay? It's about 27 yards between the two of them. Okay, thank you. Really good job here. You can even toss that one back to me. So that's what that would be. Now, if you want to kind of get beyond that, because that's really, I mean, that's the near solar system. If you want to get to Pluto, not to Pluto, but to Jupiter, Jupiter would be, if this again is a sun, if you go across the playground, you know the convenience store across the street, the Winter convenience gas station? If you go in the middle of their convenience store, that's where Jupiter would be. And this is Jupiter, a one-inch ball, a big marble. If you look in the window, can you see the person through the windows holding a one-inch ball? Yeah, probably not, but that's where that would be. If you want to keep going and you want to get to Pluto, Pluto would be like the head of a pin, not much more than a speck. And so if you keep going down 4th Avenue, you go past 45th Street, 44th Street, 43rd, 42nd, cross 42nd, go a couple houses more, that's where that speck is going to be in relationship to the sun. If you're not familiar with going north, if you think about the, from here, if you think about the intersection of Chicago Avenue and Minnehaha Parkway, that's about where Pluto would be. All right? So at that point, if you're that far away, if you imagine yourself on Chicago Avenue and Minnehaha Parkway, and if you had a clear line of sight, would you be able to see this ball? No. No. So if you think of yourself as a visitor, an outer space visitor coming to our solar system, and you get to the outer branches of our solar system, like the orbit of the outer planets, and you look at our solar system, you know what you see? Absolutely nothing. You don't even know you're at a solar system. I mean, there's nothing to see. We talk about, well, visitors will know we're the blue planet. No, they won't. They won't even know there's a planet there. I mean, can you imagine seeing that speck from from Chicago and Minnehaha Avenue? No, you wouldn't know it there. What you would notice is that even though you couldn't see the sun, because it's so dark and it's shining really brightly, you would say, there seems to be a fairly bright star over there. That was what you would notice about it. So it just gives us a little bit of perspective on what our solar system is like. And to keep this in perspective, this is the smallest, the coziest, the close, nearby, home part of the universe. But yet, it's like we're lost in it, okay? And distances get bigger really fast. The scale that I'm working with is 1 inch on my scale equals 100,000 miles. So for every inch between Andrew and Ellery, you'd have to go around our planet at the equator 4 times for every inch between there. So we're, what, 10 feet away from each other? So that's 120 inches, 4 times around the Earth, 25,000. So you'd have to go around the world about 500 times to get between you and me. And we're not quite to Jupiter yet, you know. So it just gives you a sense of this. The nearest star to us, Alpha Centauri, you know, on that same scale, would be in Hawaii. Right? So for every inch between here and Hawaii, I've got to go around the Earth 4 times. It's kind of big. After that, distances just don't even make any sense. You can't do it. Even if the scale is small as 1 inch equals 100,000 miles, to go beyond Alpha Centauri, you have to use astronomical distances to describe astronomical distances. And it just doesn't work. We can't comprehend it. It's just like, it doesn't make any sense for us at all. It just kind of hurts your mind to try to imagine it. But hey, why not? Let's try anyway, okay? So you guys all know how science fiction, science stories, on TV, they want to try to play with stars and they try to be scientific about it, but they completely blow it. So you know the experience when they hit the hyperdrive and all of a sudden all the stars just go shooting by? Or if you know, a Star Trek, when you're looking, you're in 10 forward, and you're looking out the windshield of the Enterprise, and you're seeing all the stars go shooting by? No, it doesn't happen that way. Okay, even at warp 9, which is 9 times the speed of light, totally theoretical, right? But that's what, you know, a good speed on the Enterprise is warp 9. Alpha Centauri is 4.2 light years away. So to get from here to the nearest star other than our sun would take you a half a year. So even at warp 9, which is totally impossible, the stars would still look like a fixed sky, just like they do on Earth. because you aren't going nearly fast enough to see anything move. It would take you half a year to pass the very first one. It's not like that. All right, so it just kind of starts putting it all in perspective. So then we're still talking our solar system and the nearest stars. If you want to get to the edge of our galaxy, it would take you 25,000 years to get to the edge of our galaxy if you could travel at the speed of light. Now, if you were traveling at the speed that the fastest space vehicle we've ever been able to create, the one like Voyager and stuff that's going out exploring the outer solar system, if you go at their speed, it would take hundreds of millions of years to get to the edge of our galaxy. That's a while. And here's the truth. Once you get there and you turn around to look at home, you can't see it. You can't find the sun anymore. All you see is this like kind of a glowing cloud of billions of stars, and one of them would be our sun. And then the fun thing is, once you leave our galaxy, you get into this abyss between galaxies, which makes a galaxy look like it was nothing. And you finally get to the next galaxies, but you discover that galaxies are in clusters. And so you get past those clusters, then you get, which takes phenomenal, undescribable amounts of time, you get to the bigger spaces between the clusters of the galaxies. And then you find out beyond that, there are superclusters of galaxies. The one that we are in is called Lania Kea. And yeah, you probably already guessed that once you get beyond a supercluster, you enter another void, which makes everything we've talked about up to now child's play. All right? So, what's the point? I'm sure I've got one. Let me stop and think. All right. Now, the point is that our universe is big. It is mind-boggling. It is gut-wrenchingly enormous. But there are a couple of takeaways from this that I think teach us something about life and help us understand some things and to be in this context. So I got three takeaways. You'll find them on the Sunday paper there. And the first comes from the fact that the universe isn't only big like that, but it's also always evolving. It is always changing. It's expanding and evolving and changing. In fact, it's doing it incredibly rapidly. You may look up at the constellations at night and say, well, at least one thing in the world, one thing is stable. One thing doesn't change. No, it doesn't. It only looks that way because it's so darn far away from you. It's not staying that way at all. It's moving at incredible speed. And it's not only moving at an incredible speed, but it also only looks the way it looks to you because of the perspective you're looking at it. If you were going to go to another place in the universe and look at the Big Dipper, it would not look like the Big Dipper anymore. It probably look like an electric blender or who knows, it might not look like anything. In fact, it probably wouldn't be even noticeable. All right? So it's always changing, and the perspective is always different. We get stuck on the way things are right now from our perspective. But none of those are the way it is, all right? It's just the way it is right now and from your perspective. And that's something for us to realize. God knows that. And however you understand and think about God, God embraces the fullness of a universe as enormous and complex as it really is. And it doesn't judge it for what it is right now from one perspective. All right? And just like that changing, expanding universe, you too are a work under construction that can be seen from many perspectives. Where you are right now is important because it is where you are right now. That's relevant. But who you are, what you are right now is going to be different tomorrow. And it's going to be different next week. And who you are is going to be even different again next year and a decade from now. All right? The universe knows that. God knows that. We can chill a little bit. All right, about worrying too much about just who we are right now and from what perspective. So the number one takeaway is this. Who you are right now is important, but what is really important is who you are becoming. So give yourself a little break, okay? That is never over. You can keep growing. A second takeaway I think we get from this really, really big universe is that you are all the more amazing and rare because of it. Let me explain. So if the universe is so big that you can't even really notice our supercluster within it, And if our supercluster is so enormous, you can't really even find our cluster or our galaxy in it. And if our galaxy is so big, you can't find our solar system and our star in it. And if our solar system is so big that we can't find the Earth in it, and if the Earth is so big that we can't find ourselves in it, then you're pretty little, all right? You're pretty little. But just because you are impossibly small doesn't mean that you are insignificant. After all, the bigger the universe is, the more amazing it is that you exist, that there is only one of you. Another one of you cannot be made or not be found. You cannot be duplicated. All right? Even if someone clones you, it's only a genetic copy of you, and there's a lot more to you than your genes. All right? So just think about that. So if this isn't, like, too creepy, if you're sitting, some of you are too far from each other, you might find someone that hopefully you know at least a little bit, and just grab each other's hands. If it's your friend, your partner, your spouse, your kid, whatever, that's maybe a little bit easier if it's nobody you know. But just do that and touch each other's hand. That's good. Yeah, just move, Bjorn. You can handle that. All right. So the big thing is this matters. All right. You may not be that big in this universe. You may not be an elliptical, which is the biggest single things in the universe that we are aware of, or a supercluster, which is the largest structure that we know of in our universe. You may not be one of those things, but the truth is, a supercluster cannot and will not ever affect the person's life that you are holding the hand of. But guess what? You will. All right? Feel that hand. So that's the second takeaway. You may be unnoticeable in the scale of the universe, but you are here, and that matters. It means that you are essential. Feel that hand that you are touching. I dare Andromeda Galaxy to do that. All right? It's impossible. You've got to be here. Okay, you can let go. Or you can hold on if you like it. That's okay. That's the second one. You may not be the biggest thing in the universe, but you're here, and that matters. The third one, and this maybe is the biggest one and maybe a little hardest to describe, so I need you to stick with me on this, and that is this universal perspective that we give that dwarfs us so much gives us a whole new definition of what constitutes a big deal, all right? I mean, in a universe where galaxies are colliding with their hundreds of billions of stars in the solar systems, the planets and the moons, and who knows else what's there with each other, or the galaxies are getting sucked into black holes and all of its matter being turned into energy and stuff like that. In a universe where all that stuff is going on, your problems really kind of don't seem so big, do they? All right? Even if by human standards, your problems are a lot more than just spilled milk. Now, I'm not trying to minimize our issues. I mean, we do some pretty awful things sometimes as human beings, and we get into predicaments that are just absolutely horrible. We have things happen to us that are scary. We have health problems. We have addictions. We've got financial disasters. We have damaged relationships. There's abuse. There's loneliness and racial issues, gun violence. I mean, you know what's going on in your lives, your friend lives, you see what's going on in the paper. But when we realize it in the scope of the experience of the 6 or 7 billion people on this planet, which represent approximately 0% of the universe, we realize that these experiences are not the showstoppers that we sometimes take them to be. The world will go on, and so can you. All right? So, This is a subtlety I think that we need to understand. There is an interesting balance between how much things matter and how much they don't matter. And the universe helps us understand that. There's a part of being this blessed thing that we call human beings that puts us in this interesting tension where we constantly have to balance and figure out a way through the fact that we have situations that are urgent enough that we need to do something about them, and we need to do something about them right now, but at the same time, we cannot let them define us. They cannot tell us who we are or what life is all about or what the meaning or the purpose or the value of life is. And somehow we have to play both sides of that at the same time. There's an ancient book of wisdom in the Bible called Job. All right, it's about a man named Job. And Job had what was going on in his life, what he thought was a big deal. All right? So, and then he's being egged on by three friends. And by friends, I mean the kinds of friends that if you have ones like that, you don't need enemies. All right? So he gets egged on by them, and he goes on and on complaining about his big deal. In fact, he does it for 37 chapters. And after 37 chapters of this, God has finally had enough, and God just, like, blasts him with a cosmic perspective on the whole thing. Now, 2,500 years ago or so, when this was written, they did not understand the universe the way we did, but they did understand it well enough to know that we are pretty little, okay? So God, God asked Job a long, long string of questions like these. Have you commanded the morning since your days began and caused the dawn to know its place? Can you bind the chains of the constellation Pleiades or loose the cords of Orion? Who has put wisdom in the innermost self or given understanding to the mind? And after three chapters of this dressing down to Job, Job finally has very little to say except, oops. Okay, he's a little more eloquent than that, but basically it kind of just boils down to that. And God, in the last kind of closing verses of that book, says, yeah, oops is right. Yeah. He says, but you know, Job, you aren't wrong. It is a big deal what's going on in your life. But the universe is full of big deals. And then he does what is really important and what I think we want to walk away with today. What God does about Job's big deal is that he turns him back to his friends. He makes them, he tells them to get along, and then he leads them to figure out and to start out life together. Takeaway number three. In the end, it isn't how good or bad life is. It isn't how much of a big deal you do or don't have going on in your life. It is that you are not alone in it. The same with the universe. It isn't how big or small it is. It is that we have each other. After all, think about God's main promise in the Bible. Your pop Bible quiz today. God's main promise is, I am with you. I am with you. Simple as that. Think about the main advice in the whole New Testament, the whole life of Jesus and beyond. There is one bit of advice that's repeated over and over again, outnumbering any other kind of advice that we get in it, and it is love one another. It isn't about how good or bad life is. It is that we are not alone, that we have each other as we go through this. So, in closing, our prayer as we do this, just to be thinking about this, as you have a clear night tonight or all these nights this summer, walk out and gaze up into the vastness of the stars and think about these things. Think about the fact that as big as it all seems and as insignificant as you might feel like, everything you see up there is changing and evolving. You can too, all right? Be patient with yourself. Spend more time looking out the windshield and a little less time looking in the mirror. All right? It isn't who you are, it's what you're becoming. And the next thing is, while there's so much out there that is so much bigger than you, you are here. And that matters. All right? It makes you essential. There are other people who are not here right now. There are other things that are not here. You are here right now, and you are. That counts. So, be that person. Be who you can be right now where you are. And finally, remember, in all this vastness, you are not alone. In all of whatever is going on in your big deal, you are not alone. And you are never alone. And even when it feels like you are not alone. So reach out for that hand, okay? You may have to wait a little while. You might have to reach in some other directions, but there is someone else reaching out for you at the same time, all right? So God, we thank you that you are with us, and we thank you that you gave us each other. We thank you that you gave us a universe that not only dwarfs us, but also tells us that we have a place, that we are home, and that we are amazing because there's only one of each one of us, and the bigger the universe is, the more precious that is. And we thank you, too, that we have each other. So be with us now. Help us to live that out. Help us to let other people realize and celebrate all that you can show us through this wonderful world we live in. In your name we pray. Amen.
Thanks for listening. If you found this podcast valuable, please pass it along to others. And we'd love to hear from you, too. You can email us at info@jacobs-well.net or message Jacobs Well Minneapolis on Facebook. We see what we do as a community really making a difference for people. Since you're listening, you probably have, too. If you'd like to make a donation to support this work, you can find ways at jacobs-well.net/give. Thanks. Listen again next week or join us in person Sunday mornings at 10:30.